A podcast of the cinema that's been happening for 10 years.
Every time I make a mistake, you like to say that.
Well,
this my wire got tangled and everything turned into
your memento. Every day is new to you.
That's not true. Listen. I'm only human with this lo-fi setup that we have.
But it's happened all over again.
You'll recover.
Yeah.
With minor injuries.
Fine. You're Dave White.
Yes.
I'm Alonzo Duralde.
That is also correct.
Welcome to this.
We're film critics. We're married.
Yes.
We're cute.
Sure.
I guess.
Our mom thinks so.
And we're vaccinated, ish.
Halfway.
We're half.
Havsies.
Havsies vaccinated.
Havsies vaccines.
We got the Dolly. We got the Dolly Parton vaccine.
We did, which was developed at my alma mater.
Was it really?
Yeah, at Vanderbilt. I was very excited about that.
Binge drinking was developed at my alma mater.
Oh, you didn't have to look hard to find that at mine. Believe me.
Yeah, but see, you were in Nashville.
Yes.
Where there were other things to do.
True.
I was in Lubbock, Texas.
Mm.
Not many other things to do.
Gotcha.
You see.
We had the Barbara Mandrell 1 hour photo.
See? You had the edge all across the board. You probably had, like, Mary Chapin Carpenter performing just any old wear. And you could have just wandered in and been like, who's this? You know, and heard this lady with a very sweet voice, very, very soft, husky alto voice, singing songs. Nobody knew her name yet. She's probably hanging around.
I had
singing in bars.
I did not hear of her until I left. But that could very well be that
Which
I just missed it.
Which is why you, like you probably left a bar before she went on one night. Because she was just opening for
somewhere
something.
She was some opening
the
like, mic.
Oh. Listen to this pretty music that this lady's making.
Well, yes, it was all happening around me.
So we got in California, it seems like every state is doing this differently.
Yes.
Some more efficiently than others.
Yes.
And some terribly. We were waiting for California to open it up to fat people, basically. Yes. You know,
of our age,
people. Yeah, people who are fat are that's a comorbidity.
Yes,
we have some really adorable comorbidity, being two fat queers.
Yeah, that's the name of our Two Nice Girls cover band.
That's yes. I got the a little bit of arm soreness.
Mm-hmm.
Not much after the fact. I tell you what. That second shot, I better get some good side effects because I want to know what's really working.
Yeah, yeah, I'm revving up for the tingle.
People who are happy that they didn't have side effects, my first thought is, well, then how do you know?
You got the placebo.
How do you know you didn't get
that? No one's getting in the real world, but they could be.
I know. You know how my brain?
Yes,
my brain is a fascinating place of.
Panic.
Invented worries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we've already been sort of stocking up for
soups.
Yes. We should get some juices in here.
Juices.
Probably.
Yeah.
Shot one, like if I extended my arm in certain directions, I would kind of feel it. But beyond that, that was okay. I was a little logy for a couple of days.
Right.
But, you know, beyond that, no, like, body aches or anything.
I didn't feel that people, some friends of ours who have also been vaccinated before us, mm-hmm. are talking about how, oh, I just felt euphoric, like this weight was off of me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what's it like to be you? I don't know what that's about.
I would say, yeah, I haven't had the feeling of like, whew, bullet dodged. But I think in the grand scheme of things,
yeah,
given that we tend to, you know, I won't speak for you. I feel like I go through most days, or have over the last year, feeling like this is a thing and it's going to end. But when, I don't know.
You and I responded differently.
Yes. And now it's kind of like, when is this going to end? I have a day circled on the calendar that is 2 weeks after the second shot.
I'm going to get a Filet-O-Fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. I responded in a worse way in the long run, really. Mm. Because the way I responded was thinking, well, you know, it's not so bad hiding from the whole planet forever.
Well, it has its upsides. When you can.
No. I mean... This is not the same thing as saying, ooh, a cozy night in. Like, right. This is that feeling of anxiety when you think about walking out the front door.
Right.
That's not good.
No.
That is not a good thing to have. And that is what I started having. So, I'll be forcing myself to put one foot in front of the other and walk right out that door.
Oh, look, 2 weeks after the vaccination, you're going to step out on the sidewalk and be all, hello, world, here I am.
No.
Maybe. You don't know.
I do. Listen, I know what I'm about. And currently what I'm about is the feeling of comfort of just hiding from every single thing. So I have some work to do to get over that.
I think no matter what your level of at-homeness or not at-homeness has been over the last year, there's going to be a certain social learning curve involved. Because I think even people who've been leaving the house every day and, you know, being in work situations
and having to
and
go
stuff,
out to work outside the house.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, bless all of you. And you should all be getting more money than you do. But I think that even folks like that have not been in certain social situations, you know, dinner parties or such. You know, I think there's going to be some adjustment involved.
I think the way it's going to work is that I'm going to want, like, one or two friends to come over to have dinner here inside the apartment.
Right.
Friends who have also been vaccinated. And I have a list.
Of course.
Of people in my personal circle of life who got vaccinated before us.
So you'll let the world in first, and then you'll...
I will let vaccinated friends in first, and then I will think about walking outside the door.
Okay.
And going to a place somewhere, maybe, who knows where. I don't know where. I don't know what.
Your disco needs you, Dave White.
I'll tell you something about my poor disco. It was missing me before the pandemic.
You will be showing the same amount of support now as you were.
When there is disco dancing to be done, it is often done in the kitchen, as you know. Mm-hmm. Because that is where the dishwashing happens. That is where the cooking happens.
Yes.
And that is where the disco music listening happens. You walk into the kitchen as I am preparing something or cleaning something. The disco music is taking place. You and I share a private lover's dance.
A shimmy à deux.
For no one else's eyes. And then... That's because here's the thing about going out to the actual disco that needs us.
Yes.
It doesn't open until very late at night.
Yes.
You have to pay a lot of money to go in and drink the drinks.
Obligated
to drink. Mm-hmm. People are pushy, squeezy, sweaty, drunk. Pukey. I worked as a DJ for 5 years in a gay bar.
Yes,
I already know. I like here's the thing. I like to be home. So
again, before this thing even started, yeah. I like to be home.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was talking about this very thing to a friend recently, I said, I don't know, it's a kind of a freak out to think about leaving the house. And he says, well, you were like that before. And I was like, no. I wasn't afraid to go anywhere. I simply chose to be lazy on the couch.
I decided to stay home before. Now I feel trapped in my home because I don't want to leave it.
Yeah. So, anyway. Good news, everyone.
Yeah.
I'm gonna push myself to be around people again.
I mean, same here. I felt like
there will come a day when you and I have to go back to a press screening of a film.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something. Anybody listening out there? Publicists? any publicists listening? Don't y'all be jumping the gun.
We will
not be having it.
I am already getting offers. They're telling me, well, some critics have requested a press screening. I'm thinking, who? I want names. I do not want
press. Oh, I bet I know one.
Oh, well.
Recently expelled from whatever that organization was.
Yes,
that he was
maybe.
You know he's hot to trot to go out to anywhere he can go out to.
Don't know.
Swan about.
Allegedly. But yeah, I'm like, Link, please. We're still doing the links.
What's allegedly about him?
I don't know. I just don't want to.
That he's an a-hole?
I don't want to get into it.
So anyway, that's the good news.
Yes.
For us. If you have not yet been vaccinated, please use the opportunity that you have when you get it.
Yes.
You know,
get that free Krispy Kreme donut.
Lucky us, we were fat. We got it on March 15th in California. Wherever you're living, if you can get it. When you can get it, please get it. By getting it, the more people that get it, the sooner life returns to something different than it is right now.
Yeah.
I will not use the word normal.
No.
But something different than this.
That would be nice.
Yeah. A terrible thing happened. We're going to get to the movies. A terrible, terrible, terrible thing happened this week. Murders and murders and murders.
Yes.
As we speak, 5 minutes before we started recording this podcast on Monday afternoon, March 22nd, another mass shooting is currently unfolding as we speak.
Yes.
The news doesn't even know if anyone's dead yet. Or what?
Yeah.
It's in Boulder, Colorado, in a grocery store. This is going on right now. But last week, there was one in Atlanta.
Mm.
8 women.
Yeah.
Most of them Asian women.
Yes.
Murdered by a young white man.
Mm-hmm.
Motivated by some bizarre combination of sexualized racism and religious mania.
And shame-based misogyny.
Yeah. He shot up massage businesses.
Parlors,
and it's just... I'm worried now that as the pandemic... As we see the light at the end of the tunnel of this, and people are more likely to be out in the world again,
mm-hmm.
that the quietness of the mass shooting situation that normally plagues the United States is reemerging. We had one last week, one this week.
Yeah. Schools are reopening, and those are always a popular...
So it's freaking me out.
Yeah.
But what I would like to say, and direct you to, if you haven't yet been directed to it already, there are a lot of avenues on the internet that you can go to, a lot of places on the internet that you can go to support, Asian American people in the United States. The Rob Report is one place I found. We talked about it on one of our Patreon shows a few days ago. ROBB UFOReport.com. There's a whole list of organizations that support Asian American well-being in the U.S. There's a group called Stop AAPI Hate, Asian Mental Health Collective, Asian Pacific Fund, Asian Americans Advancing Justice of Atlanta, the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum, Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance, AFL-CIO, the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, the CAAAV, C-A-A-A-V, Organizing Asian Communities, the National Queer Asian Pacific Islander Alliance.
I'll put a link to that article in
the show. There are links, there are donation links. If you can support them in on the ground, you know, ways, you can do that. If you can support them monetarily, you can do that. But we will provide that link wherever this podcast gets posted. Yeah. It's got me just even more depressed about the world than usual.
Well, I mean, you know, we're still coming off of January 6th. We're still trying to get, you know, like solid answers and, you know,
right.
Adequate, you know, response.
It absolutely feels connected to the January 6th thing.
Yeah.
It just does. And I can't say, I can't see any way that it doesn't.
Yeah.
That it isn't connected.
Well, you know, and obviously, we're coming off of this like year long where the statistics about anti-Asian American violence right. have gotten terrible.
Yes.
Because of Trump. Because of Trump and his acolytes who are all like, oh, the, you know, making
all the things,
pinning the pandemic on them and all the right. other nonsense. So, yeah, it is part of the ugliness of American life right now, which much of it has to do with white supremacy and white terrorism.
Let's be real. It all has to do with white supremacy.
One way or another, yes.
And I just noticed something about the Robb Report. I've pulled it up.
Mm-hmm.
All their categories at the top are, it says things like cars, yachts, aviation, watches.
Yeah, I wondered if you meant that Robb Report, because yeah, it's like a magazine for rich people. But I guess they've also...
I've never heard of it until just 3 days ago.
I guess they've also got a good article about, you know, Asian American nonprofits.
So it's support. Basically like Town and Country or whatever?
Yeah, but more like about stuff.
Weird. Yeah, okay, well now I know what the Robb Report is.
It's like Town and Country crossed with the Sky Mall catalog.
That's okay. I did not know.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about films.
Yes.
Zack Snyder's Justice League
mm-hmm.
that you watched and I did not.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I don't have things to say.
I'm sure you do.
But then we watched Pieces of a Woman.
Yes.
A film that came out, what, December?
Late last year, yeah.
Late last year, that we missed. We skipped over it. There's, you know, December rolls around and they just start piling on the films they want the
awards
Academy
attention.
The awards attention.
And this got a Best Actress nomination for Vanessa Kirby.
Yeah, Vanessa Kirby was nominated for Best Actress for this film. So when that happened, I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm going to watch Pieces of a Woman now. And then the new documentary about the late artist David Wojnarowicz, F-U-F-F.
We'll just refer to it as Wojnarowicz.
Well, the complete title, we'll talk about it in a
yeah.
bit. Yeah. So grab your vaccination donut from Krispy Kreme. They give you a free donut every yeah. day. They give you a free donut every single day for the rest of 2021 if you bring your vaccination
card
into the Krispy Kreme.
Yeah.
And you only, look, if you only need to have had the first shot.
Yeah.
We need a laminating machine.
Mm-hmm. Make sure that's, keep it fresh.
And then we need a Krispy Kreme to open up in our neighborhood.
That would be nice.
Because I, you know what I'm not doing?
It's a bit of a schlep.
I'm not driving to Santa Monica every day just for a donut. Mm. We have a donut shop 5 minutes walk from our apartment.
Yes.
That we haven't been to in a year.
Uh-huh. Because it's it's intimate in there. And if,
let me tell you something. May 8th.
Oh, yeah.
We're buying donuts for breakfast. Yeah. We're going to walk right out of this apartment. We're going to walk to the donut shop. We're going to get donuts. That's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
May 8th is did you already say that?
I didn't, but no.
May 8th is our day. 2 weeks after the second shot. And then I'm going to come back in here and lock the door. Also, I will be wearing my mask.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I'm excited about going to malls and going to all kinds of things. I will still be wearing a mask.
The door needs to be locked. The daytime killer is still out there.
Oh, Dave. I guess the world is getting back to normal.
Let's talk about a film I didn't watch. Go. Zack Snyder's Justice League.
Okay. Zack Snyder's Justice League. So
it's okay. It's the director's cut of Justice League.
Yes. Although.
That came out in 2017.
Yes. You know.
And with a lot of reshooting stuff.
It depends on who you ask and who says, but the version of the story is he turned in a final cut. Warner Brothers wasn't happy with it. Snyder was dealing with family tragedy and opted not to continue with the film.
Right.
So they brought in Joss Whedon to kind of create a release version.
Right.
Whedon, obviously having done the first two Avengers movies,
yes,
was coming from a very different place than Snyder was, right, in the sort of DC universe that he was creating. So you wind up with this Justice League movie that is neither fish nor fowl.
Yeah.
And after much mobilizing by fans online, now we have the Snyder cut, which involves some reshooting. And Warner Brothers was never going to let him release a four-hour movie to theaters.
Right.
But Warner Brothers would really like you to subscribe to HBO Max.
Yes.
And so that's a big part of why this thing exists, and also why this thing exists as a four-hour movie. Now, mind you, this is a four-hour movie that is cut into like seven parts in an epilogue, maybe six parts. I don't have it in front of me. Don't
distinct
yell at me.
Parts. Chapters. Like there's a chapter.
The screen goes black and it says part three, whatever the subtitle is. So one could watch it as though they were, a connected series of episodes and
a TV show
and
or whatever.
Pause, and right, come back to it later, or charge through the whole thing, which is what I did. And it is, it is certainly a consistent vision, whereas the theatrical Justice League was trying to accommodate too many conflicting ideas and put together the work of two filmmakers who come at this material with very different attitudes. This is absolutely Zack Snyder's vision. If you saw Batman versus Superman, if you saw Man of Steel, this is what he does, and this is how he wants it to look, and this is how he wants to sound. And if you liked those other two movies and you like what he does, then you will be in your glory for 4 hours of this.
Right.
I am not so much a fan of it, and so I found it kind of rough going, but it is what it is, which the theatrical version wasn't. The theatrical version was and this is a thing that's been happening with the DC movies, because like you'll recall, well, maybe you won't recall because you live in your bubble of not reading news about things, but when Suicide Squad was being made, it too was, I think, hewing more dark and serious.
Right.
And then so they put out a trailer that was lots of quick cuts and lots of literally kind of played up the sort of like dark humor, sardonic nature of the piece.
Right.
And the trailer played so well that Warner Brothers made the director go back and edit the movie to match that trailer more.
Oh. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah. So, that this is the kind of thing that like Warner Brothers execs have been doing with these movies, like where they're not really quite sure that they want to commit to the bit. they're committing to the bit here. But now it's up to you whether or not you like the bit. I'm not a big fan of the bit.
Why?
Because,
I know why I'm not a fan, but you tell me.
Well, first of all, I just think it's visually ugly.
Yeah.
You know.
We agree on this.
You know, there's a way to do a sort of desaturated, you know, almost monochromatic kind of way of telling the stories. It doesn't have to be in big, bright, poppy comic book primary colors. But this movie just it's like you're watching the whole thing has been drenched in Oklahoma crude.
Okay.
You know, and so that gets old for me very fast. The whole kind of what they call grimdark take on superheroes also feels old to me just because I was there when it happened in the comics in the 80s.
Right.
So it doesn't feel like it's fresh and bold and revolutionary anymore.
When that right-wing jerk Frank Miller came along.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Alan Moore in Watchmen, who even he later was like, look, I was in a bad mood. I did not mean for all comics to turn into this.
I was having a bad week.
Yeah.
So I invented a version of Batman that would inspire, well, we're about to get into that.
Hang on. No. Frank Miller did the Batman. Yeah, Alan Moore did something else. But
oh, you're right. Alan Moore was
Watchmen.
Watchmen. Sorry.
Yes. But
anybody listening to this show for the first time just because we're talking about Justice League is like, I'm going to kill that guy. What's his name? Dave what? Yes. Dave what?
Yeah, but Watchmen brought a attitude and a moodiness and a nihilism to superhero comics that were new at the time.
Yeah.
But then unfortunately kind of became the lingua franca of comics as opposed to an alternative mode of storytelling.
Right.
I will give this version of Justice League this. They give Cyborg some real estate, which they don't do. You know,
tell me who is Cyborg.
Cyborg is in the comics, and again, I haven't been keeping up with the last few decades, so I could be off on this. But originally, right. Cyborg was in the Teen Titans.
All right,
Cyborg is a football hero. Is in a terrible accident. His scientist father like keeps him alive by making him like half robot, basically.
Okay.
You know,
does he have superpowers or does he just throw a thing?
He can throw a thing, but he also like can access anything electrical and anything internet.
With his mind or his body?
With
it,
both.
Okay. So he has got superpowers.
He's got, yes.
All right.
He can do stuff.
I have divided up the superheroes in general. This is a bit of a digression into those that have special talents and abilities that come from their bodies.
Uh-huh.
And those who throw a thing.
Sure.
You know, Captain America throws a thing.
Yeah.
Thor throws a thing.
But even without
Wonder
the thing,
Woman is Wonder Woman. She can do all different things, right?
Thor can do things without throwing the thing, though.
I don't understand what Captain Marvel does. What does she do?
She emits energy, I guess?
So she does a thing with her body.
Yes.
Her body can make things happen.
Yes.
So she's like a Superman person.
Kind of, yes.
Okay. All right. Batman neither has special powers nor throws much of a thing.
No.
What does he get to? What's.
Well, actually.
Why is everyone so afraid of him?
In Justice League, the Flash asks Batman what his power is, and he says, I'm rich. Ostensibly, in the comics, Batman.
He's like an upset billionaire.
He's an upset billionaire with, you know, as Jack Nicholson's Joker put it, those amazing toys.
Yeah.
Also, the world's greatest detective.
True, he is a detective.
He is a detective, and also like fully trained in hand-to-hand combat.
And he's got the mythology that other people, you know,
yes,
lack.
He's like, got backstory for days.
On Twitter, one time, Seth Abramovich said his origin story is the American Nativity.
Yes.
Yeah.
the Passion Play.
Yeah.
Yes, the death of Thomas and Martha Wayne is the American Passion Play. Yeah, you know, this doesn't, I almost wish it had just been a series, because I don't think it is.
Like an HBO Max series.
Yes, yes. Like, I think
they'd extend it into like 10 hours. that would go on and on and incorporate stuff from the film and.
I mean, maybe that, but even
let it all play
even
out.
Just taking this 4 hours, if they had released this 4 hours in like half hour-ish chunks,
right?
I think it would have probably gone down easier because, you know, you and I watch a lot of 4 or 5 hour movies.
We do.
In the course of our work, we're up for a dare, you know, from a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And, you know, you pace those things out in a way that is not just like, the movie keeps going, you know, it's like pacing a 90-minute movie. It's like pacing a 2-hour movie. And this doesn't feel like it's paced to be a 4-hour movie. It's like big fight and then plot, 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 and then big fight and then plot, plot, plot. And right. it doesn't feel organic in this shape that it's in. But for the people who really wanted it to exist and who wanted to see this filmmaker be given the canvas on which to do it, you know, I think it will be satisfying. And the sort of pacing issues and other qualms that I have about it aren't going to be a problem. If you never liked the way this guy tells a superhero story, if you never liked the way that he depicts Superman and Superman's motivations, or the way he depicts, you know, Batman or whatever, you're not going to like it any better here. Ben Affleck is actually pretty good. Like, he's a pretty good Batman. He's a pretty good Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
His banter scenes with Wonder Woman, his banter scenes with Alfred are a highlight for sure.
All right.
Ezra Miller is, you know, I don't know, like
he's like the comedy of it.
Yeah,
he's the comedy of it,
and yeah, they're trying too hard. But by the time you get far enough into this movie, any comedy feels like a respite.
All right.
So you just kind of go with it. It's a lot. It's okay. Just a lot.
There are filmmakers whose work I am indifferent to. There are filmmakers whose work I love,
mm-hmm.
and to the point of maybe not even having a filter sometimes for determining, is this a lesser Claire Denis?
Right.
You know?
Top three Apichatpong?
Oh, I can tell you. I know what they are.
Okay.
But we're not talking about him right now.
Okay, fine.
We talk about him enough. I do. But Snyder is, his aesthetic is an erratic quantity for me. And it's real hit and miss. Like, Dawn of the Dead? Yes.
Yes. That's kind of my one with him.
The unintentional homoeroticism of 300? Well, it didn't matter if he meant it or not. It's there.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole? Yes.
You know, I've never seen that one.
It's just weird.
Okay.
And therefore, you know, its atmosphere stayed with me.
Sure.
I cannot remember my thoughts on Man of Steel or Batman versus Superman. I remember more about the owls than I do about those two.
Okay.
Sucker Punch is extremely bad.
Oh, the worst. Yeah.
This one, I did
Watchmen?
Not...
yeah.
Again, my memory of it is vaporous.
Gotcha.
You know? But this one, I did not watch. Mm. The tipping point for me with Snyder has been these last several films. And I just think, no. Like, my gut response when I hear, oh yeah, he's got a 4-hour one for you now, and it's a revision of the last one, I think, nope, no. I'm terribly sorry about the tragedy in his life that took him away from that film. And I also do not want to see this revised version.
Yeah.
I did not want to spend 4 hours with it, so I did not. I chose not to. But I did listen to it because I had no choice. I live in this apartment, and it was on for 4 hours last Saturday?
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I heard for 4 hours. Whoosh! and ah! Sometimes hundreds of ahs all at the same time. One lady from the Bulgarian State Television Female Vocal Choir. That is their name, by the way.
Yes.
If you go to listen to the magical 80s album on 4AD label, Le Mystère des Voix Bulgares, you will know about the Bulgarian State Television Female Vocal Choir. And you will love them. You'll have no choice. You will love them. But that one woman's vocal wail in this film becomes... it's a drinking game.
Well, it's your signal to let you know that Diana is about to kick some ass.
Good. I like that.
Yeah, but maybe you're to play it every time.
Every time. Now, the content of this film, I do not know it. I just know the sounds. Mm-hmm. When there wasn't yelling or whooshing or the one lady, you know, singing, mm-hmm. there was occasional dialogue that I could hear doing this. That's all. That's it. I was in the other room. One of the other reasons I stayed away from it, other than just aesthetic, is there's an atmosphere in the world now surrounding this stuff.
Specifically this cut.
And I don't like it. I don't like the circumstances of fandom that steamrolled its way into this taking place. I've become very aware over the past 20 years of a distorted fandom of Dark Batman. And I was talking to a woman who listens to the show this week. She did not say she wanted her name used in this conversation, so I am not going to. But she was talking about how she was fed up with this atmosphere of violence and misogyny surrounding this fandom. The valorization of brooding vigilantism, you know, the narratives of endless war that are reflected in the real world right now.
Mm.
The United States has been at war since 2001.
Yeah.
We have not stopped. And it's all over the culture now. Even children's animated films, they all end with a war, a battle.
Mm.
Harry Potter, all the YA, you know, stuff. Hologram Meryl Streep.
That whole period where it was like, let's reboot like children's literature and
right.
give them swords. Alice right. in Wonderland, Hansel yeah. and Gretel, whatever else, you know. Well, you know, and misogyny does play a role in this because, you know, usually whenever I write a less than glowing review of a DC property, I will inevitably get somebody coming after me on Twitter with the accusation that I'm in the pocket of Marvel.
Yes.
Disney's give me those fat, fat checks.
I wish.
And that's the only possible reason that I would be saying anything negative
they
about
must
a
have
DC
put,
movie.
They must have spelled your name wrong on the mail. This happens a lot.
Clearly,
the
yes.
The mail, the misspelling of Alonzo Duralde's
somebody
name.
Down the street so got all is, my Disney
somebody
checks.
Somebody else is getting this money.
Anyway, then this when my review for Zack Snyder's Justice League ran, I got the same crap from somebody, and the citation that they used to prove that I was
is good. Please talk.
Yeah,
about
that
this.
That I was that my yeah. my opinion was not to be trusted was that I liked Birds of Prey, which is also a DC film, which is also a Warner Brothers film,
but
it's a female centered one from a female director, and thus boo.
Right. Anyway, so we were talking about that, you know, the like I said, the endless war.
Sure.
Fear as a motivating force, you know, the othering of entire swaths of the population, people who are not like you, people who think differently than you. A kind of special opsidiness going on, like everywhere.
And there, and not every fan of Snyder or of these films.
No, of course not.
Fits into the worst of this category. Say.
No, if you like these films, that doesn't mean you're a misogynist. I'd like to know why you like these films, but I'm not going to call you a misogynist. But here's the thing. All right, you write a negative review mm-hmm. of a film like this, and you get people being snotty to you.
Yes.
Christy Lemire, our friend, wrote a negative review of The Dark Knight and got death threats.
Dark Knight Rises, yes.
Okay, Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, in fact,
one of the Dark Knights.
That was why Rotten Tomatoes stopped letting people, stopped letting non-critics comment
right.
on the opinions of critics because Christy got death threats for yeah. giving a negative review to The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. Women film critics take the brunt. Mm. of this stuff. I cannot bring myself to say it is the fault of the films themselves. If I did, then I would become Tipper Gore.
Right.
And the satanic panic people of the 1980s. The people who thought that Judas Priest made you want to kill yourself. You know, every moral panic arbiter that came before
Donald them. Wildman.
Billy Graham.
Yeah.
The beloved Billy Graham.
Mm.
Check into him. You want to know. I think films reflect what is happening in the world. Unfortunately, they can also provide an easy place to hang an identity on. For people who want an easier way of building an identity than doing the long work of that.
Mm.
And it's something you do when you're young. You were talking about this with me not long ago. That the teenage boys of all ages
yes.
is the phrase you used. For me, my teenage boy, you know, identity hook was punk rock, right? It's not that, I'm not that, it's not anymore.
Sure.
It's still in me to more or less some degree or another.
Sadly, my teenage boy identity was Woody Allen.
Well, you know, like I say,
it was a different time.
It was a time when you did not know the things that you know now.
Exactly.
I think that there is a certain He-Man woman-hating quality to the film industry in general. It just pervades
sure.
the film industry. So I don't think that one film can be said to be poisonous
mm-hmm.
to the point of making someone behave a certain way. But I think that fandoms that grow around certain filmmakers, Nolan, Snyder, Tarantino, who else?
I mean, is there a Bay fandom like this? Not really.
No. No, everyone knows he's a clown. But I think the fandoms that grow up around these filmmakers can become sort of an annihilating force. You know?
Mm.
The films by these filmmakers can be good or bad or somewhere in the middle, and they can vary erratically in quality or in relevance or in, you know, what they mean to the world when they're released or what they mean to the world historically. But these online fandoms are, bad.
Well, I think,
yeah, I'll just say that.
I think there's a distinction between being a fan, being a devoted fan,
right,
and then being unable to hear criticism about the thing that you love.
Yes.
And then the step after that is going after the people who would dare criticize right. the thing you love.
Right.
And we are sadly seeing that play out, you know, and we're often seeing them play out with these movies and those filmmakers. But you're right, though. I think a lot of it does have to do with the Batman fandom. Because Nolan fans who liked Tenet didn't go after people who gave it bad reviews the way they did for The Dark Knight.
Right. You know, it's hard for me, and this is something that the woman I spoke to brought up. You know, going all the way back to the shooting in the movie theater in Boulder. Was it Boulder?
Aurora.
Boulder's the one where it's happening today.
Yeah.
In Aurora. That guy thought he was the Joker.
Mm.
You know? the GD Joker movie from 2 years ago. And all of the hideous, weird nastiness that sprung up around that. I think that right now, in the culture, cisgender heterosexual white men feel like they might be pushed off the top of the heap. And they are baseline irritated about this. That if they are not in control, they will lash out violently. I've got this whole vibe in my head associated with that shooting last week. Am I right about that? I don't know.
It's of a piece, at least.
It all feels like Trump stuff to me. It feels like what we saw in the documentary Feels Good, Man.
Mm.
The documentary about Matt Fury, the artist, and his, you know, unwitting creation of a little cartoon frog that became the symbol of the right wing.
Yeah.
These are just the thoughts I've been having, the conversations I've been having. They aren't set in stone as causal. They aren't meant to say that films that appeal to these guys should not exist. I don't, you know. If there is an answer for us as critics, it's more discussions about cultural products, especially these huge corporate entertainments.
Mm.
And on the part of everybody, including us, more outside work to dismantle systems that keep people oppressed. Outside work that helps, you know, these teenage boys of all ages finding different paths to work out their whatever it is, their internal chaos. Yeah.
When they say feminism is good for everybody, you know, this is what they mean.
Anyway, I've been having thoughts, and it was thanks to, thank you, listener, you know who you are, I assume you're listening, for, you know, being there at the same time that I'm having these thoughts.
I'm curious to see if the existence of Birds of Prey, the yeah. fact that there are, you know, there have been two Wonder Woman movies and more in the pipeline.
Right.
That you get even like a movie like Shazam that is clearly like colorful and more upbeat and, you know, allows some light into it. If that's a parallel track to the sort of gloom and doom stuff, if maybe the gloom and doom stuff isn't as profitable as this other kind, I don't know where all that's going to go. But
yeah.
I'm at least relieved to know that they aren't solely going down one path of sludge. Visual sludge.
Visual narrative sludge. Which depressing film would you like to talk about next? Because here's the thing. The atmosphere surrounding Justice League is what's depressing. Yeah. I don't know if the film is or not. The film just seems to be like
enervating for me.
Maybe just exhausting.
Yeah.
But there's a documentary that will teach you about queer history in the U.S. And then there's a narrative film about a woman with a troubled situation.
Let's talk about Vonarovich because,
all right.
It is a sad story, but it's also, I find him to be a really inspiring figure.
For me too.
And weirdly yep. enough, like before, I mean, this documentary really cemented to me that, oh yeah, he's mainly a visual artist.
That
because
is
correct. For me, he's been mainly a writer.
A writer. Yeah.
It's his writing that I responded to and that was really, that had an impact on my life. But that was just a sort of side, you know, stream of his aesthetic output.
Let's talk about the name of the film.
Yes.
It's a documentary called Vonarovich.
Yes. The subtitle is Cannot Be Said in a Clean Podcast.
F you, F word slur for gay men. Effer. It is called that because that was the name of one of his pieces of art in the 1980s. Yes. David Vonarovich was a man born in the 1950s. into a horrible family situation.
Yes.
An abusive father, poverty. He ran away from home frequently as a teenager. He threw himself into sex work as a teenager in New York. He became HIV positive. And then he joined a punk band, and then he became an artist, and then he got famous, and he died in the early 1990s.
Yes.
He became notorious when the NEA and hideous creatures like Jesse Helms and Donald
Dannemeyer.
Dannemeyer, who's still alive.
Mm. Donald Wildman.
Donald Wildman. Those creeps attacking him and other queer artists in the late 80s. I became aware, as anyway, the documentary is about his life, his work, and the impact that he had on angry AIDS activism in the 1980s as manifested by ACT UP and yes. Queer Nation and the rotten time that queer people had of it back then. We know this because we were there.
Mm-hmm.
I first became aware of him because I was punk rock in the 80s, and one of the things that happened then was we would all pass around VHS tapes of Richard Kern films.
Ah.
You see. So you would go to someone's house, and someone would be, and you would watch Richard Kern films like Fingered or You Killed Me First. And so the very first time I saw David Wonorowicz was in You Killed Me First. It's him, Karen Finley, Lung Leg, and I forget who else. But it's a short, these are all short films that Richard Kern made. And, you know, that was a punk thing to do back then. Watch these really, really no, zero budget, no wave, shocker, you know, movies.
Right.
And I didn't know his name until, well, 1889-ish or so. I was working in college radio, and I went to the College Music Journal Conference in New York City, and it was 1990 because Red Hot and Blue was just about to come out, which was this big benefit album with all these, you know, bands and singers of that moment.
Yes, doing all Cole Porter covers.
Yes, all performing Cole Porter songs in, you know, new ways.
Yes, to raise money for Amfar?
I think so. But there were T-shirts for sale at the Red Hot and Blue sort of booth. Mm-hmm. At CMJ, and one of them was a reproduction of a David Wonorowicz art piece, the one where the text of I'm a blood-filled egg and I'm a giant full of, you know,
full of rage.
Rage. And I saw that T-shirt and I was like, I'm buying this.
This speaks to me somehow.
I'm wearing this. Let me tell you something. You wear that shirt in Lubbock, Texas? People do not take kindly to it in 1990. They don't like you for wearing that shirt. They yell in your face, in fact, when you wear that shirt in 1990 in Lubbock, Texas. But I did it anyway. You know why? Because I was punk rock.
Man.
Yeah, man. You can't tell me what to do. I'm a blood-filled egg. So, then I read Close to the Knives, and I assume you did the same
thing. I read Close to the Knives, and I remember finishing that book at 2 o'clock in the morning and being so upset and angry and shaking.
Anger. Yeah.
And I had nobody to talk to about it.
I
think I even tried calling my sister in Spain, thinking she'd be the one person who would be awake at that point, and couldn't get her on the phone. But I was just like, oh, God, that book really just set me on fire. Like that was
subtitled A Memoir of Disintegration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like if you knew me in the early 90s and I was like, you know, an angry queer, that was one of the books that made me that way.
Yeah.
Like David Wonorowicz, Larry Kramer.
That book made me join ACT UP.
And the band played on, you know, like those were the books just like.
I went from like coming out tentatively to being like, oh, sex with dudes, that's cool. Mm-hmm. To being like, I hate everybody.
To blood-filled egg. Yeah. Yes.
So, this is a really great introduction to him. If you don't know who he is, because he was important. He was an important voice back in that moment for queer people, and specifically about queer righteous rage at the shameful treatment that people with AIDS and queer people in general got from American culture under the presidency of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush.
Yeah. This is directed by Chris McKim, produced by World of Wonder. McKim has done other stuff for them, including Frida Got a Gun.
Yeah.
The big Frida doc from a couple years ago. Or actually, no, from this year.
Yeah.
This is one of the best World of Wonder things I think I've ever seen.
I think so, too.
I mean, because they do interesting work, but I think there's kind of a house style of their docs.
Don't knock your peanut butter spoon off the table.
There's a bit of a house style in their docs that involves a lot of sort of like stationary talking head shots.
And there are some of those here.
Some of that, yeah. But I mean, like, this is a really beautifully woven together. And again, it's one of those docs where they benefit from the person, the subject of the documentary having been quite the sort of, you know, archivist,
yeah.
You know, so they've
got Peter Hujar told him to save everything.
Yes, so he's got like recordings of phone conversations, yeah. and you know, photos, selfies, you know, like back when you just hold a camera to the mirror,
right?
You know, and all this stuff to work with. So that definitely gives him a lot to play with. But yeah, I think this doesn't feel static. It has the kind of jolty energy that Vonarovich's own work has.
Yeah, the 80s were a bizarre time to be alive and to not be straight. And so this documentary really sort of captures one element of that.
And if you're interested in sort of the recent history of the art world and where the whole sort of East Village scene moment came from,
right,
he was right in the middle of it.
There's plenty of documentary material about that era,
mm-hmm.
About the art world and about the music world of New York in that time. But so, yeah, this is a really great addition to that.
And it's funny, I was reminded, you reminded me, there was a moment there where I was like, please, no more documentaries about New York.
No more Downtown 81s, please.
Yes, no more movies about New York in the early 80s and how all the cool artists could afford to live there. And
yeah.
I felt like I'd seen the same interviews at the Chelsea Hotel so many times, and this didn't feel like that. This felt like they found a new way to cover this period in a way that I wasn't sick of. So that was exciting.
Yes. No, I'm well aware of your, you know.
Look, I as a film festival programmer, I've seen a lot of them. What can I tell you?
Must I endure more No Wave?
Yes. Oh, good.
Answer, you must.
It's another sit down with Anne Magnuson. And I adore Anne Magnuson, but it's like, I think I've heard pretty much all that she has to say on this topic at this point.
But where is this available to be seen?
It is in it's Kino in virtual cinemas in the in Kino Marquee.
You should, you know.
Yes, check this out. And then streaming on Netflix is Pieces of a Woman, featuring Vanessa Kirby's Oscar-nominated performance.
Yeah, Pieces of a Woman is the latest from Hungarian filmmaker Cornel Mundruszó. I hope I'm saying his name properly, written by Kata Weber. And it stars Vanessa Kirby as a young woman who is having a home birth. And before I continue, I should say it would be probably the best to tell you that
there's a content warning in this conversation.
We're going to tell you about stuff that happens in this movie. It's bad stuff that happens to Vanessa Kirby's character.
Yeah.
The baby dies immediately after. Later, Vanessa Kirby's character is raped.
Yes.
And more specifically, the Shia LaBeouf character, her partner, is the one who does this.
Yes.
I was just talking about this last week with someone, the shooting last week. Mm-hmm. Women were killed. And instead, people are saying, no,
A man killed women.
Man killed these women. Yeah. So there are those two things and a host of other horrible behaviors on the part of not just the Shia LaBeouf character, but the Ellen Burstyn character who plays her mother. So this is a harrowing film with a lot in it that might be tough to sit through.
If you saw White God, you know this guy is, you know, not making musicals here.
No. Now, continuing. The death of the child prompts a criminal investigation about the midwife.
Yes.
Negligence, manslaughter, etc. Incompetence. And part of it becomes a film about that investigation and her trial. The other part of it is about the dissolution, again, pieces of a woman. The other piece of this is the dissolution of her relationship with a man who at the beginning of the film appears to be gentle, nurturing, kind, and supportive, and who, in his own grief, relapses out of sobriety and then commits atrocities toward, you know, this woman that he says he loves. It also prompts hideous behavior, again, in the mother, played by Ellen Burstyn, who is gung-ho for this trial and who wants to control the life of her daughter.
Yes.
After the fact.
Well, in general, but particularly after.
In general, but very specifically.
In the wake of tragedy.
Very, you know, very machination-like, you know, after the death of the child. Says horrifying things to the daughter to manipulate her into going along with what the mother wants. There's nothing fun about this. And what was that article you were reading just recently? It was sort of like it was on Reductress.
Oh, right. Yes. This new director is either a misogynist or he has queer and feminist sensibilities. Pick one.
Yeah. You know, there are people who would say that this film, you know, dwells on ever mounting suffering of the Vanessa Kirby character.
Right.
And then there are others who would say that it, you know, very plainly lays out, you know, the problems that this particular character has to has to face and
it
deal with
her trauma,
and it deals with her trauma and her experience of it. It's not voyeuristically, you know, luxuriating in it. Yeah. It's giving this character a chance to figure out a way through.
Yeah, and it's a woman who wrote it, obviously.
Yes, so. This is unflinching, and I admire Vanessa Kirby's performance, and she deserves this award nomination. I think to be an actor and to have to live in this sort of character's mind and inhabit the world that is punishing her so heavily and, you know, for such a duration of time, it takes place over the course of a year.
Yeah.
That's got to be hard work, just psychically.
Sure.
You know. Reminded me of Emily Watson in
Breaking the Waves.
Breaking the Waves. Just this, I don't think Lars von Trier's motivations are the same, obviously, as this storyteller. But in terms of the level of performance, and her ability to communicate this trauma.
Yeah.
But, and it's a lot of trauma and it's ongoing. I'm torn. I'm torn between having my desire to tell people that it's, you know, quality work.
Mm-hmm.
and something that you should steel yourself for if you're going to watch it.
Well, yeah, and yeah. I think both of those things can be true. I'm a little less enamored of the film just because I think that all the business with the trial,
that feels strange to me.
It feels like a distraction and sort of stuck.
Particularly its resolution.
Yeah,
that
it leads up to this big courtroom moment that's like, what movie is
obviously
this?
Obviously, we're not going to tell you what happens.
Yeah, but. And it's like, I think as a portrayal of her character and not just what she's going through and how she copes and reacts and deals with her own, you know, the initial tragedy and then the other familial issues that she has to deal with. But also the way that, you know, there was a film about 20 years ago called Everything Put Together that Mark Forster did that was very much about the notion of, you know, you have like a woman is pregnant and her friends are there and her family is there and everybody's this jubilant thing. And then when a miscarriage happens, like nobody knows how to deal with it.
Right.
And nobody knows how to deal with her. And they wind up sort of ostracizing her because they don't know. They don't want to say the wrong thing. They don't know how to be around her. They don't know how to talk around her.
Yeah.
And that this movie dabbles in that somewhat. We do get, like, she goes back to her office and nobody will, you know, meet her eyes.
Right.
Her choices are constantly being questioned.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of richness there that the movie does delve into, just the how this sort of personal trauma also becomes the trauma of dealing with everybody around you who doesn't know how to deal with you.
Either well-meaning people who don't know what to do, or people who used to be who you thought, you know, you thought they were on your team, and now they are abusing you.
Mm-hmm.
Or people who have always been terrible to you and now you're really seeing it.
Exactly.
That's
the most, that for me is the part that works. But then they keep coming back to the midwife and the trial and they're like, that just feels phoned in from another film.
It is odd. I agree. Ultimately, I come down on the side of, you know, recommending this because if you can take it, you know, there is an element of hope in that it is the story of a woman who has to learn to take her life back and live again after, you know, a heap of horror piled on top of her.
Yeah. I don't have a DVD pick this week because I was going to recommend Postcards from America. And it's not streaming anywhere. It's out of print on DVD. It is like poof, gone.
It's a film from the 90s about the work of David Wojnarowicz.
Yes.
Yeah. That, who saw it? Was it a Strand?
It was a Strand
film.
I saw it at your film festival. I brought it to Dallas, but didn't get out there much. And
speaking of harrowing, that was, let's say, also.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't adapt his stuff and not, you know. And it starred the late James Lyons, who Todd Haynes' partner and occasional editor.
Yep. I too have no DVD release, streaming, or anything.
Everything we talked about this week is online.
It's a tough week. It's been a tough week.
Yes.
We have letters.
Yes.
Daniel says, springing off of Dave's recommendation of Godard's La Chinoise and my recommendation of The Inheritance from last week, the new film from...
Well, you talked about La Chinoise within The Inheritance.
I know. But The Inheritance, Grasshopper Films, go find it.
Yes.
It's great. Daniel says, what do you say to people looking to get into the French New Wave? Well, you know what I say? No.
Allons-y.
Zut alors. Over time, I've listened to the podcast. Various films have come up. Cleo from 5 to 7. Celine and Julie Go Boating. Ohasar Baltazar.
Does Bresson count as New Wave?
No, but... Because, you know what? He just had his own lane.
Yeah, he's of the period, but not of the...
He came before the New Wave, and he kept going.
Yeah.
And I don't know who he knew in the world.
Right.
And I, but here's a clue. You never hear anybody talking about hanging out with him.
Well, he seemed like, if, based on his movies, he seemed like he'd be a fun guy.
Yeah, I was hanging out with Brisson.
Having some Gauloise and knocking back a Pernod.
He continues, but the New Wave as a cinema cultural landmark is a little daunting at this point. I'm a little bit versed in American noir films, so maybe something riffing on that, like Breathless or Shoot the Piano Player. Your mutual love of Agnès Varda has also made me excited to see more of her films. But as I've only seen her short documentary, Black Panthers.
Hmm.
On a less related note, I finally got around to watching Baccarat, which I enjoyed immensely.
Wait. Let's answer the New Wave question.
All right. Okay.
I think, you know, you don't have to watch all of these, obviously.
You could kind of jump in anywhere, honestly.
Right. But what I was going to say is, if you find it daunting, like, go in order and, like, start with 400 Blows and Breathless. That's where it all starts.
Well,
More or less.
Okay.
You know, yes, Suzanne's career, and there's some other, but like the two
biggies.
There's
an early Varda film that came before Breathless. You want to go back to Chronicle of a Summer, you know?
If you were taking a survey course about the French New Wave,
all right,
it would start with the 400 Blows of Breathless.
Okay.
Start there.
Fine.
And you're right. If you are a noir fan, then you'll click with Breathless, and you'll click with Shoot the Piano Player. It's very much playing with those tropes.
Vivre sa vie.
Yes. Vive sa vie, A Woman is a Woman.
Anything with Anna Karina in it. Just start. Yeah. You could start there.
You know, Weekend.
Weekend is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
La Collectionneuse.
Uh-huh.
My Night at Maud's.
Yeah.
Did
Romer think of himself as part of the New Wave?
Oh, yeah.
He hung
out with those guys. All right. Was older than them.
Right, that was the thing.
But he
was older, and he didn't tell anyone in his life he was a filmmaker.
But he kind of, he helped sort of shepherd those guys.
His family didn't even know.
You know, Celine and Julie for sure, but like, yeah. What's an earlier, maybe shorter Rivette?
I'm blanking now. Blanking. I'm sorry.
Last Year Marienbad.
Creeping Marienbadism.
Yes. So I'd say, yeah, start with any of those, but yeah, you really can kind of hop in and out wherever you want. La Chinoise is maybe not your, where you want to start with Godard. You definitely don't want to start with like film socialism, but you know, you get,
why not?
You get there.
Why
you,
not?
You get there eventually, you know.
Two notes about Baccarat.
Yes.
He continues, I noticed an 80s synth track on the score about two-thirds of the way through, and I thought, wow, this is a really great riff on John Carpenter soundtracks. Well, turns out it is a John Carpenter track from his solo album Lost Themes.
Nice.
Silvero Pereira, who plays the local bandit warlord leader Lunga, is also a drag performer who goes by the name of Giselle Almodovar.
Ooh, good
That's
one.
A good one, yeah. Found a short interview with him from Interview Magazine.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you, Daniel. And Jonathan. Jonathan says, they sang Friends Are Friends Forever at our going away church service when we moved away in 1992. Yeah, they did.
Well, there you go.
Listen, that song was only 10 years old. It was just gathering steam then. He's referring to the little snippet of a Michael W. Smith song that you hear in the film Minari when they're in the church, I guess, break room or whatever, the gathering room that's not the main room. Yeah. And boy, I picked it up on it like that. And I said to Alonzo, oh no, Friends by Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant. Friends are friends forever. If the Lord's the Lord of them, Alonzo.
Has that been your experience in life, Dave?
I love my friends.
Okay.
And they have been my friends for a very long time. some of them, a handful of them, the Lord is still the Lord of them. They were nice to me when I came out, and they got to stick around. I allowed it.
I think there were people who were not nice to you when you came out who would claim that they, the Lord is the Lord of them, too.
Well, different Lord.
Okay.
Okay.
Jack Lord.
This is from, I don't know who this is from.
Dr. Steve.
He doesn't say. Dr. Steve, you did not sign your name to this letter. Okay. Anyway, Dr. Steve says, once I finished the WandaVision finale and all of its CGI effects, I happened upon a story about deep fakes and how they make celebrities look like they said things they did not. This reminded me of something that's been on my mind for a while. Do you remember the movie Looker?
Day. I've never seen it. Dave, our friend Dave Kittredge is obsessed with it, and he keeps meaning to make me watch it, and I want to.
Well, let's watch it sometime.
Okay.
Have you ever discussed it on your podcast? We have not. In that movie, models who are not perfect enough undergo plastic surgery to correct their flaws. When they still aren't perfect enough, an advertising company scans their bodies so they can be digitally recreated in commercials without flaws. The movie was made in 1981, before the modern era of lifelike CGI and nearly imperceptible deep fakes. I don't know if anyone else remembers this movie, but it was incredibly prescient, and it sticks with me.
I think to Michael.
Let's watch it sometime.
A Michael Crichton film, if I'm not mistaken. There was a Blu-ray in the last few years, so somebody remembers it.
Yeah. Oh, hey, I just got an email that Gunda is finally being released.
Oh,
like
okay.
We super jumped the gun on talking about that.
Yeah, we were early. Yeah.
We talked about it after its Academy.
It got an awards
run,
yeah.
And then it just never wound up being available to be seen by human beings.
Well, now you can.
You're going to be able to. Mid-April.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gunda.
The pig
documentary.
And just a teaser for next week, we will be talking about my favorite film of 2020 again, Collective.
Will we?
Because Dave is finally going to see it.
Finally going to watch it.
Because it premieres on Hulu this Thursday.
Yep.
So by all means, if you have not seen it yet, check out Collective. It's really great. And it's up for Best Foreign Film and Best Documentary.
Best International
Film. Sorry,
I'm
not used to that yet. Best International Film and Best Documentary Feature.
Every once in a while, the categories change.
Yes.
And their names change every so often.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we're done.
Fine.
We're done.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hey, did you know that we have a Patreon? We do.
Yep.
At patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Yep.
Tons of extra content.
Yep.
Monthly club meetings.
Yep.
This and that.
Yep.
The other thing.
Sure.
Check it out. patreon.com/linoleumknife. Thanks for listening.
I got it. One more thing.
Yes.
As part of my week of, you know, being unhappy.
Mm.
I did read a really great article on a website called Blood Knife, which, come on now. What is, first of all, this is the first I've ever heard of Blood Knife, but they have knife in their name.
Mm.
So, you know, affinity group.
Yes, a sister site.
They call themselves a digital magazine about sci-fi, horror, and capitalism. And the name of this article, which I've read in its entirety and can't get enough of, is called Everyone is Beautiful and No One is Horny. Modern action and superhero films fetishize the body even as they desexualize it.
Hmm.
And it begins with a discussion of Starship Troopers as a film that predicted all of the future.
Hmm. The co-ed showers.
Go to Blood Knife, bloodknife.com.
I'll tell you
and
what,
read this article.
Send me the Rob Report link.
Yeah.
Send me the Blood Knife link.
All right.
Put both of them in the show notes
all
for
right.
this program.
Okay.
Check out our friends on the internet. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the critically acclaimed network. Listen to The Schmoes Know, Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon that I'm going to be on soon with Kurt Holman to talk about a comic series that I'm a huge fan of. Secretly Timid, all things cozy, Sewers of Paris, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys of the Movies, Criterion Cast, The Workroom, Big Fat Gay Podcast. Oh, and do please check out my other podcasts.
There are so many.
Who Shot Ya, Breakfast All Day, A Film and a Movie, and Mondays I'm doing Deck the Hallmark, and we talk about non-Hallmark made-for-TV Christmas movies. Boom. You can follow us online at Linoleum Cast. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. If you leave us a five-star review, we will read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback.
Just don't gush too much. I mean, it's very embarrassing.
Oh, Dave will learn to live with it.
Self-conscious.
You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, CastBox, Podbean. Thank you, Blue, for our amazing theme music. Follow him on Twitter at Blutopia. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us at linoleumcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And, you know, keep wearing a mask, keep washing your hands. This thing isn't over yet.
I mean, it's not embarrassing if you say nice things about us, but I have so many problems in my brain.
No. this is how you're going to work through it, from all the praise we'll be getting.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
I know. I'm learning how to deal.
Y'all are awesome. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you.
We'll catch up with you next time. Until then.
Goodbye.